Welcome, dear listeners, to Food Conversations Season 7. Now, before we begin, as always, we must never forget that we are living and working in Shkrempkulu, the ancestral, unceded, and actually stolen lands of the Shkrempek people. And it's obvious that doing everything we can to resolve this situation is an important and necessary and ongoing responsibility for every one of us. Now, today we have two well-known and accomplished guests on Food Conversations, Melanie Bennett, Project and Volunteer Coordinator with the Shuswap Food Action Society, and Patty Thurston, Executive Director of the Shuswap Family Center. Both play important roles in working to enhance community well-being in Salmon Arm and the surrounding area, and both are here to remind us of an important event coming up on Saturday, February the 24th. And that event is the Coldest Night of the Year. It's a fundraising drive, an annual event that supports a range of activities in our community, spearheaded by the Shuswap Food Action Society. Welcome back, Melody and Patty.
Thanks for having us.
Good morning. Thank you.
Lovely to have you here, and lovely to be talking about an event that has been transformative for the Food Action Society, but also, you might say, played a really significant role in the development of this community at large. Become a central event. Wide range of programs are focused around food security and food sovereignty, and they are there because of Coldest Night of the Year. And also, I would remind listeners that this program is closely allied to the Shuswap Food Action Society as well, and it's an extension of a former program that used to be at the college. Now, it's interesting that the origin story of the Coldest Night of the Year is no longer on the website. I tried to look for it this morning. And what I think it means is that the process has become so embedded and so self-sustaining that it's, you know, the two guys in Ontario who started up are no longer the center. And in a way, maybe that's understandable. But it's also an interesting point because how do we support one another? We support one another through individual generosity, but there's also the whole point of, should we all collectively support one another? Should we have some kind of program? But anyway, so Melanie, as the protagonist of Coldest Night of the Year, as you said to me, it occupies your entire winter season.
Yes,
Let's talk about it. Just give a brief outline of the program, the CN Coldest Night of the Year event. What's going on?
Yeah, so to reiterate, you know, its origins in 2011, you know, in the eastern part of Canada, to the point where it's now in 180 cities across Canada and now moving into the States. So it's grown dramatically. And from its origins, it very much was to do with supporting homelessness. That's why it was the Coldest Night of the Year. It's the idea to put yourself into others' shoes to understand what it might be like to walk the night just to stay warm. So that's where the origin comes from. And it's grown to be about supporting charities who help people through their struggles. And that can be the hungry, the hurting, and the homeless.
That's the theme of Coldest Night of the Year.
Yes. And it started here in that way, too. And I'll be honest, I don't know exactly, you know, who first started or hosted it. There you go, Patty. So it would have been for the Shuswap Family Center. You know, the Salvation Army hosted it for a few years. There was probably collaboration with the food banks as well. So in the end, 4 years ago, when it was gifted to us, that's really how we see it. At that time, 4 years ago, which would have been just before 2020 when it came to our awareness, there wasn't anybody at the time, no other charity in town could host it because it does take a lot of work to put it on.
So, Patty, when you were involved, it was sort of off the side of your desk, as they say.
Absolutely. I forget the gentleman's name that called and asked if we would support and get it going, and I said yes.
Would it have been Mika?
Yes.
Yeah.
From here, the person who approached you?
No.
He was originally from here, actually. Yeah. He's from Salmon Arm.
Yes.
And he works with the Blue Sea Foundation to find those charities who could host the event.
Yeah. Interesting. So you were approached.
Yes. And well, Justin, our treasurer at the time, was approached, and we took it to the board and said, do we want to do this? Here's the pros and cons. Could somebody do it? And yes, we can. And so we did.
How much of a debate was there? Were there people that said, oh, it's too big, it's something that's beyond our scope, that kind of thing?
No, honestly, we just said to ourselves, we need to do this. Mm-hmm. We need to give this a try. If this can help and generate some funds to help us grow, we need to. And so we just did.
I think history has stood in favor of the decision.
Yes. And, you know, who knew that what was about to happen next would? So 2020 happens, and it's, you know, all of a sudden this event is now going to be virtual. It's not even the original event. It's supposed to be people get together inside buildings and you have a meal together, and it completely transformed. But they adapted, they adjusted. We're going to do a virtual event. And that's what we did as well. So it was very much, you know, the Blue Sea Foundation has created a really excellent platform. So this online system is all theirs. The Tooks, they provide everything that you need, the signage, everything.
At the same time, the money you raise stays in this community, which I think is maybe that's why it's so successful, because it really makes a point that the money's not going to go, you know, 25% for administrative costs. Everything you raise in Seminar stays in Seminar.
It does. Yeah. Every charity that hosts it, they are fundraising for themselves.
I want to mention, when I looked at the website earlier today, what I was struck by was they have four stories of four individuals who have epitomized the stories of hurt, hunger, and homelessness. And I listened to a little bit of each one of those four. And I was struck by the fact that these four people were articulate, insightful. They were quite humble. You know, I mean, they didn't hide the stories of pain and suffering that had led them to be either living on the street or using drugs or other sort of things. But they were so like all of us. You know, I think it's a wonderful thing that that's there, because it really, it's a new feature on the website, but also it's a clarification of the funny ideas we have about people who are. Patty, You see lots of people at the Shushup Family Center that are, only 2 years ago they were secure and they were able to look after themselves.
And now they're unhoused, yes.
And what's that like to see those kinds of transitions?
Oh, it's what's frustrating is I've been in this business for over 30 years, and it seems to be...
remind listeners, you had a 30-year career as a social worker on the front lines in Saskatchewan.
But it's getting more extreme. It seems to be getting the top is heavy and the bottom is light, and there's nothing in the middle hardly anymore. So we're all struggling out there financially, trying to live in Canada right now. So mostly it's frustrating. It's frustrating that we have broken systems. It's frustrating that people don't want to get involved or... And that's what I'm here today about, is like, we have an amazing community. We're collaborators. We work hard. And I think we're here to remind us, like, let's get back at it. Let's go for it and be that community again. Rebuild. Because we are rebuilding after the pandemic, in my mind.
I think that's very important, the point about community. And we did talk about it before the show a little. The idea that we're all in this situation together.
Absolutely.
I think one of the counter trends that is one of the reasons why I am such a fan of the universal basic income is that the disparity between those who are very wealthy and those who are not has expanded and increased dramatically over the last 15 to 30 years, to the point now where a couple of dozen very wealthy people have as much assets as half the world's population. They can't possibly use those assets. And the people who started CNOY, Coldest Night of the Year, were not you know, wealthy people. They were people who just had a vision. It was really a powerful vision. So, Patty, the hurt, hunger, and homelessness issue, you see up front, and you said it's becoming more pronounced. Who are the people who are joining the ranks of the people who are having a hard time?
Well, I think last year we discussed, and it was a lot of women 60 who were single, whose houses were sold because they were renting. What I noted this winter is young men. A lot of young men between, I don't know, 28 and 30, maybe younger, just lost souls, it appears, you know, struggling with either addictions or, you know, having labor contract work, which is seasonal, and how do you pay your rent when there's no work, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm seeing a different demographic this winter. So no explanation why.
Do you have a sense of the factors that might have pushed them into this role? Is it that the job market is harder to get into?
I'm not really sure what's going on, because we all know that employers out there are struggling for employees. We've seen that. Through the pandemic, it appears that the online jobs of we've lost a group of people to working online. But I don't know what the issue really could be other than, you know, the mental health and substance abuse. And, you know, trauma is the gateway to addiction. So, you know, breaking down families and all those things. And when we add the added stressors of income struggles onto families, then, you know, that broken family unit, excuse me, which brings us back to community. It takes a village to raise a child. And I think we're failing a little bit there.
I would agree with you. Remind listeners again that I'm speaking with Melanie Bennett, who's the project and volunteer coordinator for the Food Action Society, and Patty Thurston, who's the executive director of the Shuswap Family Center. I think it's time for us to talk about the coldest night of the year. I was thinking that if this had happened about 3 weeks ago, it would have been the coldest, minus 24, and it would have been, as it was last year, quite a challenge. Last year it was a snowstorm.
Yes.
There's a picture of me and a bunch of other people all encrusted with snow sticking to our toques. But this year, it seems to be shaping up, meteorologically speaking, for a little bit better experience.
Who knows?
Why don't you just run through the day or the night?
So, you know, as I mentioned, it started off as this virtual option, and we just really like that. So, you know, every year we've continued to do this same sort of idea where we end up having an outdoor meal together. So we're carrying on with that tradition. We get together what we call our walk party at downtown Saskatoon, and people can come and we have drinks and treats, and we'll have face painting, and we, you know, people who want, they can check in. If folks have done the fundraising, because this is a fundraiser in the end that ends in a walk, and we have this year's toque. It's actually my favorite of all 4 years so far. And so those who have done that minimum level of fundraising can receive their toque at the check-in. People get together with their teams. We make team signs. We really want this to be about, you know, like getting together. It's a lot of businesses.
It's a big social gathering.
Absolutely. It is a community building event. That's what it's supposed to be. And the reason that I love it so much, and I've mentioned this before, is that anyone can participate. You don't have to fundraise to participate.
And in fact, there's a team coming from this very station.
Yes, both.
Tom
yes.
Brady, our engineer, has organized this in a brilliant way. We're going to be out there and we'll be enjoying it.
Yeah, it's about building camaraderie. It's about coming together. We really encourage people to, like, if you know someone who might be a little lonely, maybe they're new to town, invite them to come and walk with you. Like, have them join your team. So we get together, we start the walk at 5 o'clock from downtown Saskatoon.
There's after a few speeches.
Yes, and we're going to try and keep them to the minimum this year because it can be really cold. So, you know, we're going to have a couple heaters down there. You can do some jumping jacks and warm up, whatever you got to do. Dress warm, that's the idea, and then head out onto these routes. So we have a 2 kilometer and a 5 kilometer route. It heads across town because it's going to make its way towards the fairgrounds. This route actually does sort of touch upon multiple things that are sort of important to the Food Action Society. It does go around a community garden, which is not ours, but it still showcases a community garden at 10th and Shuswap. It comes around the fairgrounds, which are an important part of agricultural history here. It will stop at the rest stop is at the Salvation Army, which is where we collaborate and do the food forest.
Let me just interrupt for a one event that is, or one process is in motion now, and that's at the fairgrounds. Something's going to happen to the fairgrounds with respect.
Not ready for that yet, Warren.
Oh.
But it's, yes, people will come around the corner and be walking by this particular building that is the Shuswap Agricultural Association's building. That's where they have their offices. And it's at the corner of 5th and 5th Southwest, right beside Blackburn Park. And we're going to be building a community garden there this year. That is part of our goals. And a share shack. So that's something totally different too. So, you know, people can make their way to Salvation Army, the Lighthouse Ministries. That's where we have a rest stop where people can warm up if they need to, use the bathroom. They're open and can have more treats and more drinks.
Last year, I think it was a lifesaver.
it was chilly for sure. Yeah. And then we make our way back down to downtown Askew's, which is where we have our stone soup. This is our sort of analogy of what it means to be a community, everyone adding something in to create that different flavor.
So you're going to have to give a little bit of a synopsis of the stone soup parable.
Yes.
Because it's a parable.
So once everybody comes down to downtown Askew's, which is where their patio is, and actually this year we're going to build upon the event too. We are going to be closing the road down a little bit in front of Askew's. We anticipate a lot of walkers. We want families there. We want it to be really safe. So we are going to block off a little section in front of Askew. So it just really opens it up. We'll have tents and heaters and just provide sort of this sort of fun, almost carnival-like atmosphere. And there you will have the ability to go and get your bowl of soup and inspired breads, buns, organic. More, you know, coffee and treats and come together and congratulate all of our walkers for a job well done, for doing it and, you know, getting out of your comfort zone, coming together, showing up. That's the big thing, and doing something really positive for the community.
Now, you also have sponsors within the community who help organize the event. You can maybe mention them if you can bring them to mind.
Well, I do. I mean, for 4 years, we've had almost all of the same sponsors. They believe in what we're doing. They appreciate the work. And so, you know, we've had Askew's and Saskew has been our co-lead sponsors. You know, these are organizations that support us throughout the year. We have some supporting sponsors so that, you know, each sponsor has different levels of tiers of sponsorship. This year we actually have BC Housing that came on. They've sponsored 30 different locations in BC. Brown Johnson, Land Surveyors, has been here with us for 4 years. Buckerfields, I mean, they support us in so many different ways.
Absolutely.
And then we also have Canoe Forest Products. They've been with us for the last 3 years as well. And multiple sponsors. We have a lot. Yes. And it means a lot to us because these are businesses. And I've put this in a lot of posts. Our local small businesses are constantly asked to give. And they invest their money in the community because this is where they live. This is where their kids go to school. This is their home. And they continue to give. And we want people to know not only eat local, but support local as much as you can. If you can buy something here instead of going to another town to buy it, please do.
We're just running a program right now. It's a grant we received, the radio station received, interviewing people who are in small businesses downtown. And there's some interesting features that have showed up, one of which is that on a given street, the businesses really do work together. They do help each other. The sort of rule is if you don't get up and shovel the snow in front of your store, it's probable that the store next door is doing it before you get there. That kind of camaraderie you're talking about is really something that has emerged from what was a very open-ended discussion. We just asked them to tell us what it's been like, especially with the last few years, which have been very different years for many businesses. And this sense of, first of all, they're very happy to talk to us. Nobody comes and talks to the business people as people. They come and buy a product, but they don't talk to them as people. So you have toques. Okay.
Yes.
What are the toques like this year? As you said, it's your
favorite. It is my favorite because it fits
your
the
own
nicest.
Proclivities for toques.
Yeah, this year it's fun. It's bright. Every year, Blue Sea Foundation comes up with a new theme for coldest night of the year. So they've created this beautiful sort of mosaic. It's meant to be an idea of a kaleidoscope of people. It's and their theme this year is actually look closer, which is, you know, why we want to look closer at what's actually happening in our community. Why are we doing this?
Well, those four stories on the website, I would encourage all listeners to go to the website and just listen to these four people. They're all very different, some older, some younger, but they're presenting the fact that these are people like us. These are not people that come from a faraway planet. They are very much like us.
These stories are happening here in our community. These are stories of people who just can't quite, for some reason, they've had an injury or something and they can't make their rent anymore. So they're now unhoused, but yet they're working. There are so many working people, two incomes.
Patty, you see a lot of these folks up front and close. You see them. What kind of patterns do you see? I mean, you talk generally about the fact that they're young men coming up, but can you think of some of the stories that, or the kinds of stories that they tell you when you ask them what happened?
Well, I never ask because these people are us.
Yes.
We are all one.
Right.
And so generally, the story is very similar to what Melanie was just saying. Mm-hmm. An injury, sickness, someone's unable to work, any of those things, and all of a sudden you're not able to have the same income you had before, and then you don't have a place to live because rent is very expensive. So, and we know people who are living in their cars and working, and that's a reality right here in our community.
I can think of at least one story of one of my patients who's told me he's quite happy with me sharing it, but he was injured in an industrial accident. He was holding a heavy-duty drill, drilling through a 16-foot concrete wall, very heavy-duty foundation wall, with three layers of rebar in it. And the drill caught on the rebar, and the clutch failed. So this device that weighed about 15 pounds, he'd been holding it for something like 2 hours without a break, and suddenly it caught, and it twisted. The rotations per second were about 14 rotations per second. So suddenly, this drill flips around, did a lot of soft tissue damage. He ended up having a couple of surgeries. WorkSafe BC is kind of impatient with these long cases, so they after a certain point just said, sorry, you're fine now, which of course he wasn't. He hasn't able to use his right hand ever since. He can't even write a letter, one sentence, and it starts to kill him. So he was living in the street in his vehicle and briefly went back to using cocaine, which he'd done earlier in his life when he had some difficulties. But then he quit right away, very suicidal, and then kind of got to low-cost housing. And finally, there's a stability in his life. But it's a life just one inch above the flood line of not having enough to live. And his rather overfed basset hound, Daisy, is his companion. And as he has said on a number of occasions, it saved his life.
Yeah.
We all need a sense of purpose.
Yeah.
And, you know, each of us will have our own sense of purpose. For whatever reason, I've come to food as my sense of purpose. I think it's because I have children and I want them to grow up as healthy as possible. I'm looking at the healthcare system. I'm looking at the level of illness, family members of my own family who are passing away from cancer. I see what's happening and I want to do everything I can to prevent it and getting my kids back to a certain level of knowledge about food and where it comes from, just getting back to some basics.
And isn't it particularly satisfying to be working, and for both of you, this is the case, both of you are working hard to try and make things better in your community, and there is a particular sense of satisfaction from doing that. It's not traveling to a faraway location to stay in a 4-star hotel and eat the local food. It's staying in your own community, which is a very beautiful community that people from all over the world come to. And you're actually participating in making it stronger, more welcoming, more balanced. You know, there's more balance in the community when those who are materially at the bottom are lifted up, and also when those at the top kind of come down and join the crowd. It must give you a particular sense of satisfaction.
The work I do gives me tremendous satisfaction. I I want our community to be healthy and safe for everyone. We cannot escape our community. You can go away on a trip, but you're still coming back. And you cannot build a gate around yourself to keep everyone else out. Yeah. We are not an island unto ourselves. And so we need community sufficiency so that everyone thrives, because that is better for everyone.
And people who build a gate around their community are not necessarily happier around their own lives. Actually, there's quite a lot of evidence that increases stress, and if you cut yourself off from the rest of the community. Just remind again, listeners, that I'm speaking with Melanie Bennett, Project and Volunteer Coordinator of the Shoe Shop Food Action Society, and Patty Thurston, Executive Director of the Shoe Shop Family Center. Patty, you have some actual programs around food. I think because we're talking about this very important event, while it's not, it's mostly funding the Food Action Society, you also have some programs around food. Yeah. Why don't you talk about, especially the ones around youth?
When I moved back home, I was surprised that we had so much food and it wasn't getting to the people. So that's where it started. And I love food. I love to eat and I love to cook and I love to grow.
I'm addicted to food. I admit it on rare. I have to eat it every day.
and I do. I love it. So I wanted a community that, because when I first moved back home, the unhoused and or the more vulnerable weren't as visible as we are seeing in our community now. Mm-hmm. So I always had the community kitchen, the youth community kitchen, and as you know, Warren, Ebony Vardell, and John McLeod, bless his sweet soul, mm-hmm. Were picking rocks off the community teaching garden back mm-hmm. then. And so mm-hmm. I'm so glad Melanie is taking it.
That was your first contact there.
Yes.
Yes. Wonderful. Yes.
He went to school with my auntie.
That's what happens in a small town. Yeah,
absolutely. But Melanie has taken it to a place I couldn't even imagine, and I appreciate that every single year. It just warms my heart what goes on up there. But speaking of youth, we do have a new program launch. It's an entrepreneurial program for youth that are at anyone in Salmon Arm, but I want to speak about a particular group of kids right now, if that's okay, from KCS. They, the last two Novembers, Ella LaFleur's grade 10 family and society class pick a day, and they live unhoused and solicit business for funds for charities.
And food challenged.
Yeah, they are food challenged that day, and well, they stop by the center, and I give them candy.
You rescue them.
Yeah, and then they spend that day without any electronics, anything, and they have donated to the Salvation Army through this, the Family Center and the Safe House. But this year, four of the students, or maybe five here, Levi, Gracie, Holly, Grayson, and Asher, put forth on paper and what they think the solution is, and they all agree it's affordable housing. They are wise youth, and that's what I'll take a moment right now is for your kids, like, bring them out, get them to understand, you know, like, instead of asking them how school was, maybe ask them how they helped someone that day or you know, something like that, to change that mindset. Getting our kids out and about and understanding is really important, I think, for the next steps, because this is not a short term.
Isn't that one of the problems we've had, is that we have sort of sequestered ourselves in certain parts of our community and not seen the whole community? And what you're talking about, and these children are actually focusing their attention on, is actually seeing the places that they wouldn't automatically see the way we've structured society. We stay in our neighborhoods. We stay in our sort of social group or social class, even, that is not necessarily experiencing these things. This is a wonderful thing.
Yes, and I think that that's, that peace and families is showing up on Christmas holidays and helping out with food for the more vulnerable people in our communities is great. But again, coming back to... how important we all need to work together, from little children to our seniors, which tend to get forgotten a lot. And we need to remember that. And so even if they can't come out on the coldest night, they can still be part of your team in other ways.
Sure.
So, you know, grabbing everyone you know, and because the funds are important. We need them. We need these funds from this fundraiser for our community. So getting out there and doing it and supporting it the coldest night is probably the one thing we can all do this winter together that puts us all on the same playing field.
The expansion of the program, I think, speaks for itself. It's really taken off. I looked at the numbers on the national scale, and it's now extended to the United States as well, which is interesting. The goal is $13 million. And already, and we're, you know, roughly a month away, 28% has been raised.
Across Canada. The entirety of cold.
That's
coldest
right,
under the year.
Locally, you're 50%. You're well,
just
49%.
About.
Well, 49 is pretty.
Fingers
close
crossed.
To 50. you know, something like $34,500. I mean, it's clear that people are really taking this seriously and recognizing it's the right kind of thing. It's enjoyable, but it's also got an underlying purpose, which is to reach out to the community at large. Now, you both have this connection with the Teaching Garden. When you first came here, Patty, that was one of the first places you became involved with. And it's become really a central figure, which contributes quite a volume of food into the public food system here. Why don't we talk about what it's doing these days, the Teaching Garden?
Yeah, and that is how I met Patty, too. So, you know, I got involved with the Shoe Shop Food Action Society quite a few years ago, but it was just because I was interested in food and I wanted to find my tribe, you know, and I sat there and I thought, what could I do? I could make your posters a little nicer. I could make a Facebook page. You know, everybody has a skill. What skill do you have that you can share? And that's how I started. But, you know, you get into these conversations and you look a little deeper and you start to get more involved. And I love gardening. I just, you know, thank goodness I found that. And so that just became a natural extension. Okay, well, we need to keep going with this community garden. This is a joint partnership between the Shoe Shop Food Action Society and the Family Center. So this needs to keep going. And that was my passion. So that's where I kept my focus. And I mean, I would say for sure, we kind of limped along for a little while.
Well, back then it was grants, right? Or it was individual donations. It wasn't this kind of, and we're going to talk about how the trajectory of the Food Action Society has been altered by the coldest night of the year and its injection of energy as well as money.
Yeah, the garden in its inception, I was not a part of that. That was Patty, that was John, that was Ebony, the landowner at the time. Yeah. You know, they did secure those grants and they got it in place. They got the drip irrigation and the tools and everything to start that garden. And then, you know, Ebony had to step away and I stepped in. And then we just kept it going for a while with, you know, the minimal kind of funds that Food Action had at the time. You know, with help from Buckerfields, with donations from people. We got a couple of, you know, really handy donations of seeds sort of by accident, but we just kept it going. And at this point now, you know, Shoe Shop Food Action, I'm not going to take the credit for the garden because really it comes down to, you know, Sue Moore, Elmarie Roberts, who have completely transformed this garden, and, you know, our core volunteers. When 2020 happened and people couldn't get together, the garden became this place where we could, because it was outdoors, it was safe, people could, this was that thing that they could do. And so we had a really cool core group of people who came up to that garden and made that their home for about 2 years. And since then, we've had some that have remained, you know, Rita and Nan, they're, you know, they're our core sort of volunteers. And they continue to come, thank goodness, because it's a big space and we're trying to grow as much food as we can.
And they also come because they really like it. They really think it's a wonderful project.
They do. It continues to happen. Number one, because the landowner that now owns the Clack family, Shelley and Nigel, they continue to see its purpose and they continue to allow us to use this space for free. So we do that. It is these core volunteers who they love that the food, the fresh, naturally grown produce is being delivered down to the second harvest every week come harvest season.
You know, I'm just thinking, you know, a warm summer's day and you're not sure what you want to do. And you say, well, should we hop in the car and drive down and go shopping somewhere? Well, no, you could stay in Salmon Arm. You could go to the community garden and you could, the teaching garden, and you could get your fingers in the soil and see plants growing, plants that will be edible when they're of a suitable size and people around your neighborhood will be eating them.
And this is meant to be a teaching garden. It can be a little challenging because it is definitely out of the way. You have to make a choice to go. And we've had classes and we teach and we try and be there consistently, like we advertise when we're going to be there, so that people can learn how to grow their own food. Learn while doing.
Let's, using this as a prime example, things have changed a lot for the Shuswap Food Action Society since coldest night of the year. Why don't you give us a little bit of a description of that process and how things have changed, because it's pretty dramatic.
It is. So like I said, that garden, we were just, you know, keeping going, really. And from then until now, we now have completely transformed almost the entire space is now growing. So there's, you know, that trajectory. The downtown Salmon Arm Farmers Market was started, and that was, you know, just that was a passion project. And now it has become to the point where it's a year-round farmers market. The farmers, it's bustling in the summer. It's up to 50 vendors. You know, it started with maybe 10.
And contributing considerable amounts of money to the local economy.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's been studies of how much it can contribute. So beyond the fact that it can, you know, create an opportunity for people to come, but it's supporting our local farmers. We had farmers that were going to other locations to sell their food. They were going to Revelstoke. They were going to Armstrong and Kelowna. Now they're able to come here because it's become a viable farmer's market.
And plus, when a producer brings his or her produce to the farmer's market, there's no middle person. They go locally, drive over, bring their food, and sell it directly to the population at large.
That's right. And, you know, of benefit too, of course, is the fact that we can then use the BC Nutrition coupon program. So this is where the Shuswap Family Center also then plays that role, is that people can come to them to pick up these nutrition coupons. Without a farmer's market in Salmon Arm, people would not have that access to be able to shop at the farmer's market. So that's another trajectory of the coldest night, is we now have the ability to create our own food coupons. So this is the shoebox food coupons that we've invested in to be able to use when the nutrition coupons end, because they end in December and there's still 4 months where people are still food insecure, but they didn't have access. So we now are supplementing families to be able to provide these food coupons. And that allows people that dignity to go to the farmer's market and shop and choose the foods that they want to, not just be handed the food.
Patty, obviously, when you interact with the people who are your clients, maintaining their dignity is a constant focus. Talk a little bit about that and how you see people respond when you treat them with that dignity.
Well, just like the rest of us, it's respect, right? And keeping a space, which is why I rebuilt the family center and got that wonderful location to do that, is creating a space where people could come in and feel safe and have some dignity. My community kitchen is open for anyone who wants to come in and make a can of soup. We have a washer and dryer that people can come in and we just sit around and talk. And, you know, everyone has a story. Every single one of us has a story. So just remembering that it could be you.
It's interesting how many guests on this show, many of whom are very successful, like both of you, and yet the stories are never straight lines. They are filled with serendipity and fate coming along and either boosting them or putting them down. And it's something that's so universal, that serendipitous process that we all live through, that it really behooves us to recognize that that's a constant. Again, remind listeners that I'm speaking with Melanie Bennett, Project and Volunteer Coordinator with the Shuswap Food Action Society, and Patty Thurston, Executive Director of the Shuswap Family Center. One area, Melanie, in which the Shuswap Food Action Society has really expanded is into the world of education. You are now creating all sorts of programs. So why don't you just outline some of the programs, because they're really astonishingly expanded over what they used to be.
Yeah, and then in that continuation of, we'll also bring up school meals, which, you know, is it, okay. So yes. Because we are also providing education too. So again, that growth, you know, in 2019, 2020, We had one program that happened. It was called Kindy Buddies. It was really fun, but that was reliant on grants, and grants fizzle out. And then when everything happened and kids couldn't leave the school and there was no food really in schools. I mean, Serena Kaner, as a dietitian, she went and she actually got a grant to be able to go and do a study of, like, what is the food in these schools? Mm-hmm. And it was really sad, mm-hmm. you know, and there's very few lunch programs, you know, Canada being, a very rich country has no universal school meal
system. And we're one of only a few countries in our sort of materially endowed range that doesn't have a universal school food
program. Yeah, and we know, and this comes back to the food insecure, there are a lot of kids going to school without food. And it can be for various reasons, but a lot of it comes down to they just don't have the food to go to school. And so we have to take care of the kids. And in order for it to be stigma-free, to make sure that the kids feel comfortable to ask for food, to not be penalized or judged, it has to be universal. It's just the way it goes. And so we've been able to create, you know, from, again, 2020, we had a hot soup once a week at Jackson High School to now we have school meal programs in three different schools. So we continued, we grew the Jackson kitchen to be 4 days per week. We now have 3 days per week at Shuswap Middle School and 1 day a week at South Canoe.
And you've actually been able to hire people.
We have to. Yes. No organization will run purely on volunteer effort. That's not actually completely true, but that's not the norm.
We would admit that the radio station is pretty much completely volunteer, but we know what you're talking about. Yes.
So the other spinoff was the Super Meals program. And this is the idea to, you know, how can you make an affordable meal for people using local ingredients that can then make it to the schools? And that's soup. Not every child loves soup, but we're trying to make sure that they get the...
We're going to train them
to love soup, because, you know, you can use the ugly vegetables and you can use whatever you have. Soup is just a really good nourishing meal, and we can use local ingredients. So Super Meals was developed, but it came last year. It was really just the schools that could. It was PACS who would, you know, buy the soup and they would serve it to the soup. But now the provincial government has stepped up. They've provided a fund called the Feeding Futures Fund. This is now providing funding for schools to be able to buy these soups. And we are serving to 14 different schools, even into Armstrong, as well as the college. And we serve to the Food with Friends lunch program, even the school office.
It's important to mention that Serena Kaner, who was one of the founders of the Shuswap Food Action Society, is now employed in
the school district.
In the school district.
That's right.
And is helping to coordinate this process.
Yes. Serena, we came into this. I mean, the Food Action Society has been around since 2006. It was a cooperative, changed into a society, and actually through serendipity again, it was became a charity. And so, you know, through her leadership as our president, executive director, her focus was food to people, good food to people, but local food to people. And that is because we have got to support our local farmers. We have to keep them thriving so they stay here.
And if we want to control the climate crisis, we have to avoid having food that has 5,000 kilometers of travel before it gets to our plate.
Yes.
So
So food has so many different positive impacts between socioeconomic, environmental, health. Food is the key.
Food is love.
Food is the bridge. So yeah, Serena has, you know, she saw the need and she, you know, she created the Family Box program, you know, found the grants to be able to buy local food to give to families that needed that hand up. That's kept over $100,000 in the local food economy through when it started in 2020. The school meals, we buy as many local ingredients as we possibly can. That's keeping a lot of money in our local food economy as well. And the super meals, almost all the ingredients are local as much as we possibly can. And, you know, she saw the need, she filled it, she created the programs with the belief that eventually there will be some funding that will come. The powers that be will see. And they did. And so now we do have this. How long it will last, I guess, I certainly hope whatever new government ever comes in will continue to see the validity to it.
Well, it's a fundamental program that treats people's lives at a very fundamental level. Why don't you talk a bit about Mary Rodriguez, who is also very actively involved, and now you can afford to?
Yeah, we had her on in a previous episode, so her story is a little bit more there. You know, Serena, like I said, she did step into a new role with the school district, and that is to, beyond the schools that we are focused on, now it's all the schools. So, you know, it's a full-time, you know, 8 to 4, Monday to Friday job, plus also still doing all of the consultancy and helping make sure that the programs that she started continue. So she's, you know, still a part of the Food Action Society, even though her role is actually with the school district. But Mary has stepped in, you know, as a volunteer. We all start as volunteers, and then we, you know, move into to something else, into staff. And so she is now our school meals coordinator. She is making sure that the Super Meals program runs, that the cooks for our other school meal programs are well cared for, that we are being efficient with our ordering. You know, so we're looking at the whole and making sure. So she's going in, she's picking up the food from the farms, but we're looking at all the meals. Where can we make sure that we are being efficient and effective with our spending and buying in bulk and making sure there's no waste?
All of this would have been impossible without the funding that has come to you through Coldest Night of the Year.
100%.
I think that's important for listeners to understand that the kind of way that you keep something going is, you know, that year after year, the support will be there. And we talked a little bit from time to time on the show today about grants and what grants are like. Typically, they tell you, the granting agency tells you what they want you to do, and it fits aligned with what you're doing. Patty, over the years, you worked as a social worker for 30 years, and that was a funded position. What was it like coming to Salmon Arm when you wanted to start up a new program? You have generous donors who support the family center, but there's this kind of sword of Damocles, the grant thing, still kind of hanging around the background.
Well, the two programs that I have that are completely unfunded are food security, believe it or not, and community counseling, mental health. So that is all about writing grants. And grants are, they're the fundamental piece, but we need to change this. I don't know. They're very tedious. I call them colonial. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Shuswap Family Center has been around for 35 years doing the work. And yet again, I have to prove that we're doing the work. You know, it is the way it is. And so you write the grants and you hope you figure out their magic formula and cross your fingers. And I have been very successful, thank goodness, in some grant writing, and where I am. So
it almost ends up being a little bit like begging.
Begging. and proving you know, that we're valid, that we're doing good work, that these are good people, that we are not going to steal one penny. I mean, as you know, all nonprofits, we have to balance to zero. We have to have our books checked out every year. I mean, we're scrutinized very hard to the penny. So
I think what we're really talking about is that it's assumed that the needs are real, and therefore the funding has to be the same way three meals a day is. Mm-hmm. It's something that you engage in on a regular basis. I made a joke of being addicted to food, but it's something we need. So, Melanie, you've got this much expanded program base. It's pretty secure because Coldest Night of the Year is not a granting program. It's a program where the community earns the money and then keeps the money, and they supply the framework in which to do it. Why don't you talk a little bit, because somebody might have missed the beginning of the show, what the structure of the event, you know, just run through it again so people have an idea.
So we still have a month to go. And again, you know, this is a system that you can sign up online to walk, to join a team or walk solo. Like I like to say, we are all one big team. And you do your fundraising online, or you can do it in person, of course, too. I mean, in person is always preferable if you're looking to secure a donation from someone. But all the actual funding goes through the system online. On walk day, Saturday, February 24th, we've all, you know, we've done what we can and we've raised our money, and now we're coming to celebrate. That's really what it comes down to. So the cause is serious, yet the event is fun. And so we come together at downtown Saskatoon. We have a little walk party. We get refreshed.
What exact time do you turn up?
I'm there at like 2, but the check-in for whoever would like to come starts at 4. Now, I know last year some people said that was a little long. So again, it's open at 4. You can come right up until 5 o'clock if you'd like. The walk itself starts at 5. Mm-hmm. And we start from there. We do our routes, 2 kilometer and 5 kilometer. Those are on the site. And we really encourage people to have a look at the route in advance. But yeah, we're all walking together. And that's a part of the fun, too.
But there's volunteers out there for the stragglers.
We
like
have
me
people
on occasion.
Leading. We have people walking behind. We have EMT just to make sure everyone's safe. We've got people on the route with signs.
Have the EMT ever had to do anything?
Not yet. No, they've come.
It's a safe event.
It's a safe event. That will depend on the weather. I mean, last year it was a lot of snow. I hope it's not a lot of ice. Mm. So, you know, we do our best to make sure that everything is safe. The city does their best to make sure that the sidewalks are clear. And then we'll see what the weather does. But we do our walk. There's a rest stop that people can stop at to hydrate, have a break. And then we make our way down to downtown Askew's to finish and have our finish line party and share a meal together.
The stone soup.
Stone soup.
You've avoided giving the story of the stone soup. Do you want to just outline the story?
Sure. It's told in many different countries, so it will always have its own little nuances. But what it ultimately comes down to are some strangers who come to a community, and the community is very closed off. And yet they come out and they ask for a pot. They get given a pot, lent a pot. They put in these stones. They say, I'm going to make this community stone soup. Everybody starts becoming curious. What are they doing? And they come out and they say, this stone soup would taste so much better if we had some carrots. Well, I have some carrots. This would be so much better if it had some garlic. Well, I have some. And soon enough, the whole community each brings just this one thing that they have that they can add to this pot. And when they do that, the soup gets better and better and tastier and smells better. And they have this big, huge, nourishing meal because everyone has added at least something into that soup to make it better for everyone. And they share the meal together and become a stronger community for it.
It's a parable that is a parable for our time.
Yes.
It's one that we should all be listening to. Melanie Bennett, project and volunteer coordinator with the Shoeshop Food Action Society, and Patty Thurston, executive director of the Shoeshop Family Center. It's been lovely having you here. We've talked about something that's really very important for this community that elevates the level of security in our community and also brings a lot of people together to have a good time. What could be finer than that? Thank you both for being here with us today.
Thank you.